Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Nadia is an Australian singer and songwriter who grew up with a blues guitarist father and was surrounded by a family who played music. Imbued by music's power to heal, connect, and make people feel seen, Nadia has captivated audiences in Australia and overseas over the years, previously supporting the likes of Russell Morris and Tex Perkins, and performing in the VIP lounges for the Beyoncé and Adele Australian tours. Having also starred in the sold-out musical Eulogy for a Genius, a Ray Charles tribute, Nadia also leads her own Etta James and B.B. King show with Jimmy Hocking of the Screaming Jets fame. Alongside her myriad of creative pursuits, Nadia also fronts the Melbourne-based collective Ramble, whose 2016 and 2018 releases Let Love and Love in Newcastle garnered them national attention. The band won Group of the Year at the 2017 Australian Blues Music Awards and scored number one on the Australian Blues Charts the same year. Most recently, Nadia earned a top five spot at the 2025 International Blues Challenge in Memphis, making her the only female artist to reach the finals among 400 acts. Up next on Celeb Savant, discussing her journey in the entertainment world and the releases of her new music in 2025, is Nadia. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I'm actually in the land down under in a place called Australia. I'm doing really well. The sun's shining. It's always a good day when the sun's shining.
Lovely. I agree. I totally agree. So now let's rewind. At what age, whether you're a child or teenager, did you feel, okay, I want to be creating, I want to be doing music, I want to be writing music? How did that journey progress?
Well, interesting you say that. I don't think I ever thought to myself, I want to be a singer or an artist. It came very naturally to me. My father was a blues musician. My mum used to take me to church, so I was in the church band as well. At that school, you know, when I was really young, I used to write a lot of poetry. And when, you know, I was around 5 or 6 years old, my teacher actually said to my mum, there's something really special about your daughter. She's got a really great singing voice in class and, you know, and she sings very in tune and she's writing some great poetry. So you've got to watch out for her. So it just sort of progressed from there, having a musical family. I'm of half Italian, half Filipino heritage. So it's really in our culture, I guess, music. And, you know, as I got to sort of my teenage years, I joined different bands and where it was in different musicals and it all sort of just stemmed from that. I fell into it by accident, but I love it.
Do you still currently write poetry?
I do like to write poetry every now and then, but predominantly at the moment, because I'm in this situation where I'm releasing songs and trying to get my music out there, I'm writing quite regularly.
So unpacking your creative brain, when you write a song, how do you do that? What is your creative process?
There's not one standard process, and I think a lot of creative types would attest to that. I could be driving in my car and go, oh, I've got this really cool melody in my head. Or I might have one of my producers, you know, send me a track, or my co-writer, Matt Robb, he sends me tracks too, or we work together in the studio. And basically, I just connect with that track or connect with that moment and how I'm feeling as well. Because what I write about is very personal to me. It's very much about what's going on in the world, what experiences I've been through, if I'm feeling happy or I'm feeling sad, I channel that through. But my most sort of common process, I guess, is when I do get a track, I sit there and I'm thinking about how I'm feeling, and then I hear some vocal melodies in my head, and so I'll start humming them, you know, da, 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 da. And then I'll go, ooh, I'm feeling like this. So I might put a lyric there and come up with a verse part, and I'll record it in stages until I've come up with a full sort of song with different melodies, and then I might add some lyrics later on. So that's probably my most common process when I'm really just trying to make sure that musically, because for me, singing and writing songs isn't just about writing the song, it's about how it musically fits in instrumentally to the composition of the music as well.
So now you reference that you get those bits and then you hear a melody to connect with the song. Does that happen instantaneously, or is it sometimes like you have to think about it and then come back to it?
You know what? It happens instantaneously for me.
Okay.
I hear something and I just go, boom, I've got this straight away in my mind. And I think, you know how some people listen to music to relax?
Yes.
I can't relax when I listen to music because I'm thinking about that drum beat, or, wow, that's a really cool bass line, or that's really great keys, or love those lyrics. I nerd out over the music, I guess you could say.
So when you're listening to songs, your technical creative brain is unpacking what you're listening.
Yes, yes. And I'll go, wow, I love how that producer's done that, or I love that run that vocalist has done, or, yeah, that's what happens to my brain.
I'm unsure if you are aware of NLP, so that's neuro-linguistic programming. So this is the way people process information. And there's a subsection within that category called processing skills. And there are three of them. Something kicks into us as a child, which allows us to have a dominant one. We have a dominant one, which allows us to be in it most of the day, a secondary one, which is a couple of hours, and a tertiary one, maybe, if at all. So you have visual people. Visual people create pictures of the information they're hearing. So as I'm talking now, a visual person will be seeing the pictures in their brain. Then you have auditory people. They are on all the audio elements. So basically, they'll hear a word, they'll put the word into a sentence, sentence into paragraphs, and so forth. Then you have kinesthetic people. It's all about the energy.
Yeah. I know about this.
Mm-hmm. Energy, the body language, the tone of voice. So now, focusing specifically on music and listening to music, are you seeing pictures? Yeah. Are you hearing the words, or is it about the feeling and energy?
I think for me, it's a mix of two. Well, it's all three, really, but I lean heavily more, probably into kinesthetic, the feeling that it gives me. And, you know, and then I kind of comprehend it when I'm unpacking it and thinking about it, but also probably visual as well. When I'm singing, you'll notice if you see me perform on stage, you'll see me move my hands when I'm doing different notes.
Okay.
Because I'm visually sort of seeing that note and how I maneuver through it. So yeah, probably lean more towards kinesthetic first, but visual plays a part in it too.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to say thank you to you guys for all the hard work that you're doing. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklet, listening to song from one to whatever number. I'm unsure if you're aware that physicals are on a massive comeback. Vinyls in the UK last year, 5.9 million sales, the biggest since 1990. There are also a basket of products in the UK where they gauge exchanges on. And there needs to be a huge amount of exchanges in a day for a product to be in this basket. And because of the upsurge of CDs last year, CDs are now back in the basket. And there's research is showing, that it's the teenagers, the younger people that are diving into the world, not the older nostalgic people in inverted commas. But then we also have streaming platforms that people consume music on. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
I definitely have to agree with the vinyl space. I am in another band as well. They're called Ramble. And so I've been performing with them for years and still do. And we have released a couple of vinyls and, you know, they do quite well. And also with this single that I've just released, my new album that'll come out mid-year, I'll be releasing it on vinyl as well. It lends itself in that way with my R&B soulful background that, you know, that I'll be doing that too. So I guess, yes, I think vinyls are on the upsurge. I didn't realize that about CDs.
Yeah.
But certainly digital, the digital world, because it's so accessible and so easy with one finger click to just listen to something or follow someone, I still think that overpowers everything at the moment. And I feel that if you are in love with an artist and you want to follow their journey, you'll go to that extra step. Like you're a super fan and you really want to be a part of their journey in their world and you will purchase their products. What I'd love to see resurge actually though is tapes. I go back to the 90s and early 2000s. You know, I remember listening to radio stations and putting my tape in and trying to record it. I would love to release something on a tape. I think I might, actually. That's a good idea.
Well, cassettes, they actually are on an upsurge again, and not as much as the others, but they are. I've seen quite a number of artists releasing cassettes. I agree with you with regards to putting in to record the radio. And then I always used to get frustrated if the DJ spoke before the end of the song. I was like, damn it, man, I wanted the whole song.
It was an activity when you were younger, like to put your tape in and record something.
But now, okay, so you've got your solo project and the band. So tell us, how do you balance up the two? Or is it just 50-50, or is it just as things flow?
I mean, I've been playing with Ramble for over 10 years, and they are such a great band. It's led by Justin Yap. He's a phenomenal guitarist, and he just came with me to the States earlier this year. We were in an international blues challenge where our band came top 5 out of 400 acts within the band category. Yeah. So, you know, I have a lot of respect for Justin. He's an amazing songwriter, an amazing guitarist. And we've been touring and doing lots of festivals. And it just so happened, you know, when I was at the US this time round, I was also working on a separate project. And I guess my project is me wearing my heart on my sleeve and my song lyrics and, you know, what something that's a part of me. I never expected it to go anywhere or do anything with it. Okay. You know, you can always try as an artist. You know, when I was over there in the US, I had a lovely person kind of discover me, I guess you could say. A bit like the olden days when someone walks in, right place, right time, you know, sent over my stuff. And this particular track that I've just released, Is It You? He was just beside himself. He absolutely loved this track, thought this is a great opportunity to get you into the world. So, you know, I'm still doing projects with Ramble. I've got some festivals later in the year. But I'm now off to America on Monday to finish my album. And I think they work hand in hand. You know, if I have success in one area, I think there'll be success in another area.
So when you had that moment of, you know, like the movies, right place, right time, how did that make you feel? And you've had success with the band and that. Were you surprised that you're like, oh, now I'm venturing into my own little world of creating in my own space?
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm a very humble person. And so, you know, I never think that highly of myself, I guess. I mean, I know I'm talented but you know, I'm not delusional, and I just go, well, whatever happens, happens. I'm not trying to force anything. I like the energy and the things to just come as they do. But that feeling of having someone listen to your track and then say to you, I want to be a part of your journey and I'm going to push you and I want to manage you. And then on top of it, in that competition, he wasn't the only person that did that. Uh-huh. You know, there was others as well. And so for me as an artist, it was very validating because, you know, I just go, yeah, I get up and sing and I tell my stories and I write my songs and we'll see what happens. But for someone to believe in you, mm-hmm. and for someone to be behind you and go, you know what, you've got something, you're talented, your songwriting's next level, your vocals are amazing, you know, let's do this. It gives you this self-confidence, you know, and I think any artist that's out there, and I think the piece of advice I can give is have a team around you, because there's no I in team, first and foremost, but also you need the networks around you and you need the positive energy around you. And sometimes you need a person to just push you and lift you up in those moments where you're feeling up and down. And the feeling of it's amazing. And I'm so excited to work with my new management and USA team.
So you've referenced that you're going to America shortly to finish the album. What else? Obviously, the intention and focus is on that. Is it, and the shows with the band. Anything else that's happening, or that's the busyness for the next period?
I mean, look, I've got a single launched in Australia. So, you know, I've got some wonderful artists that are supporting me. Tanya George, she's amazing, a vocal looper in Australia. And she's just hit number 3 on the ARIA charts as well, with her new song. And then I have, Mayfield performing as well. So that's the nearest thing. And then on Monday, I jump on the plane and, I will be hanging out with my new management and we'll be completing the album. The album's done, I guess. But it's really just putting my vocals down now. And solidifying that. And there's, you know, a bunch of meetings I've got there and I guess interviews with different radio teams and TV. And we're just we're just going through the journey and seeing how it all pans out within America. And the plan really is to try to push my music as far as it can go, release my album mid-year, and then hopefully go around the world and tour.
Yes. And you come to South Africa as well. Let's put that out
there. I would love, I've actually got a stepsister in South Africa and she's been nagging me to come over. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So when you come over, you must let me know. We'll hang out, go for coffee, have some tea.
Yes. Love it. Love it. I love a cup of tea.
I'm very fascinated by this. So I'm so grateful and excited that you're releasing an album, because these days people are like, it's a single world. It's the EP world.
There's no album. Yeah.
Why do that? Because I love it and I support it. But there's so many artists like, nah, we're not doing it because of whatever. What was the inclination or motivation to say, okay, we're actually going to do this?
I have been releasing singles for years and EPs and all the thing. And I've just, and I go back to the days of where my favorite genre of music occurred, you know, and that's everywhere from the 50s through to the early 2000s. And I remember that moment where artists that you loved and followed would release their album and you'd be waiting till that album came out. And then, you know, as the digital world changed and things evolved and now you can stream things really easily and attention spans are shorter, everyone's gone down this strategy path of releasing a single so that you can, you know, get that spike, have that momentum, and then, you know, you release another one and you hope that that flow continues. And I just think the beauty of an artist and the beauty of songwriting is really about the story that you tell. And I have a lot to say. So I'm going to have 12 songs on this album. And I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to release an album because no one's doing it anymore. And I think we should be. And I hope that other people will release albums as well, because you know, your art is more than just one song.
Because the album tells a story, tells a journey, whereas the single just gives a snippet. And yes, the attention spans are shorter, but people are still wanting those stories. They don't just want a snippet of a story.
No. And I feel like we're going back to basics a bit, to a certain degree. Now, like you said, there's been a resurgence on vinyls. There's, you know, a lot more people are growing veggies in their garden. They're trying to be more healthy and healthy options. And I feel like music's potentially going a little bit that way as well, you know, being raw and real instruments and releasing albums.
So when you perform as a soloist compared to the band, what is that difference? Because obviously with the band, there's that support, not saying that, you know, when you're performing solo, there's not that support because you've got the band behind you, whoever's with you. But there's sort of that different energy between being part of a band structure compared to performing solo. Is there a difference for you?
I wouldn't say that I necessarily perform solo because I always have a band with me. But I guess what you're trying to, with my other band, Ramble, it's like it's a group kind of decision, whereas under my name, Nadia, that's a solo decision. Yes, Ramble are like my family. So I just love creating music with them and going on tour with them and performing. It's so much fun. I consider that like a family thing. And then my solo thing is my heart and soul. It's wearing my heart on my sleeve. It's more touching for me. So when I get up on stage and I'm performing an original song that I've written and I've put my heart into, and then someone from the audience comes up to me and says, that song touched me. I really love that song. How can I find it? It's a different feeling. It's this like someone is actually loving your art that you've put out there. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely, completely. So I'm that dude who's right up in front at concerts. I'm jamming, doing my thing. I'll take my cell phone out for maybe one or two songs, one or two videos, and then I put it away. I notice that these days, a lot of people, for a lot of the time, they're videoing, they're posting, they're tweeting, they're doing whatever. So from the person on the stage's perspective, are potentially seeing a bunch of phones compared to a bunch of eyes. Do you find that it takes away a little bit of that connection, or it's just where society is at this stage?
That's a good question. I think of myself when I go and see a band, and I've got some of my favorites too, and I'm sitting there filming because from my perspective, I want to capture that moment because I just love that artist so much. But I do think it takes away from that kind of like mindfulness, like being in the moment of that and absorbing it. Instead, you've got this piece of technology in front of you. So a bit of both. I think to be in the moments, you would absorb it a lot more. But I understand why people want to film it because they want to capture it so they can watch it again. And then at the end of the day, as an artist, you like it when they film you because they're going to post it on socials. But I know what you mean. I think with anything, being in the moment and not having technology around you, you're more likely to absorb it and be in it a lot more.
Exactly. Mm. I love this game. I know if I had to answer this question in 5 hours, 4 minutes, 2 hours, I know your answer will be different every time. I understand that and I recognize that. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five artists once you finish this conversation, and if you can think of specific songs of those artists, cool. If not, who would be the artists you push play to? And if songs come to mind, what would those songs be?
Oh, I love this question. I have so many favorites. One of my absolute favorite artists at the moment is Leanne LaHavis.
Yeah,
she's from the UK. She's got a lot of great songs that are out there, but one that I probably particularly connect with is What You Don't Do. I love the vibe, the soul elements to it. I love her realness and rawness as well in her way that she approaches songs and the stories that she tells. So yeah, she's probably up there. I also like to go back in time, and I think it's also because my father gave this album to me as a very young girl, an artist by the name of Eva Cassidy. And Eva Cassidy, look, she wasn't a songwriter as such. She was someone who took songs, reharmonized them and reinterpreted them in her own way. You know, for example, one of my favorite songs that she delivers is Autumn Leaves, and it's a jazz standard, but she has completely reconfigured it and made it into this beautiful ballad where her voice sounds like an instrument and almost like a horn instrument because of the notes that she delivers and she takes. So yes, Eva Cassidy is definitely up there for me, and her Live at Blues Alley album. Another one, I guess you could say, is I do love a bit of Joss Stone. Yes, her Soul Sessions album.
Yeah.
There's so many songs. Fell in Love with a Boy, Some Kind of Wonderful, so many tracks. You know, there's so much energy. And her voice is just incredible. It's raw. It's no one sounds like her. She's very unique. There's a band at the moment called Moonchild. Do you know Moonchild?
I've heard of them, yes.
Yeah. I think what I love about them, so the, you know, they're like a three-piece band and they're sort of like two keys players. They all play horns. And I actually want to, like, you know how I said before that I struggle to relax when I'm listening to music? I listen to Moonchild and I just sit there and I go, wow, that note's meant to be there. I can't believe that they've approached it in that way. I love how they've done the keys and the bass here and the horns and the voicings of the vocalist as well. So, yeah, The List is a song that I like of her, of theirs. Oh, and this one's going to be a toss-up because I certainly love Etta James, and everybody knows that, you know, 1950s. But a newer band that I'm obsessed with is Lake Street Dive. Do you know Lake Street Dive?
Yeah. Them, those I haven't heard of, so I'm going to do a deep dive once we finish this to find out who they are.
Check them out. They actually came to Australia just recently, and I was able to see them live. They released an amazing rendition of Jackson 5's Want You Back. They did it with like an upright bass and you know, did it quite acoustic and a bit jazzy, I guess you can say. So that was the first time I sort of discovered them. But then as I started going through their albums, and, you know, I love all their albums. Side Pony is one of them. And they've got a song called Side Pony too, and it's about rocking your side pony. And I love a bit of a side pony, so I connected with that song instantly. And, yeah, like I think, again, the musicianship in that band, the songwriting, the way that they approach songs and the fun that they have with it, like they don't take life too seriously. So, yeah, they're probably my top five picks. But Etta James is borderline in there because I love her too.
So, Nadia, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Just be who you are and follow your dreams and embrace your imperfections as a person, because that's what truly makes you unique. Don't sweat the small stuff. Think about what makes you happy and go with that and remove all the things that don't make you happy. And if you have a dream and you have something that you want to achieve, just do it, in the words of Nike. Just do it. Just go with it and make it happen.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.